Hi, this is Iris Jackson, and this is Miracles Happen, Dreams Do Come True. And I like to share often with you a miracle in my life, a pillar of light, a way shower, an example of living a divine life and having divine relationships. And an author, a speaker, and one of the leading ascension teachers on the planet. The beloved, beautiful, precious, dear, shining Joanna Cherry.
Oh, thank you, Iris. Wow. It's hard to live up to that one.
You already did, darling.
Thank you.
You know that I am not a flatterer.
No, I do know that.
Makes it kind of good to get compliments from me, doesn't it?
Sure does.
Well, today, Joanna has agreed to speak on divine loving relationships. And I am so glad. What is a divine loving relationship? What is your definition, Joanna?
Well, I think, first of all, it has to start with one's own self in seeing oneself as basically divine and perfect and flawless. Even though the way we might express ourselves in the world may have all kinds of numpsy kind of things that happen, you know, and pratfalls and, you know, things that we say that we later regret and all of those things that happen with just about everybody on earth, still to hold ourselves in that really true, that really true sense of self, of knowing who we are, knowing that we truly are the image of God, Goddess, and that we are a Christ, an anointed one, not referring to Jesus the Christ. He was a Christ. The Buddha was a Christ. Muhammad was a Christ. We're all basically the anointed ones of God, of Goddess God, who are divine in our essence and limitless, boundless in our essence. Miracles are natural to us. So it kind of has to start with ourselves, and then whoever we relate to, that sense of divinity and perfection we want to extend out from ourselves to each person that we, not only the ones that we're in relationship with, but the ones we see as we walk down the street or drive down the street or go into the store or whatever. It's like, who are we all? And one of the things that I was shown recently is that the tremendous love and courage. If each of us is a great and divine being, and the love and the courage and the sense of adventure and daring that it took for us to put part of our essence, a fragment of our consciousness, into a human form in this plane, on this earth, where there has been so much that is not what you would call heavenly. Not what you would call enlightened or kind, and to come here and to go through oftentimes tens of thousands of lifetimes or more, and getting lost, believing that we are these small, kind of helpless or victimized beings subject to age and death and disease and all of that and lack and all of the ills that we have experienced in human form, And then finally, to come out the other side and remember who we are, remember our divinity, remember our goddesshood, our godhood, our unlimitedness, and begin to experience this again. I just was struck by the tremendous courage and love and a sense of daring that it takes for any of us to come here onto Earth and to actually come through all of the difficulties out into enlightenment and godhood. And what I understand is that we then are the wisest beings in any universe, basically, that we've come down into such density and then come out of that into our God self, into our truth once again. And so it's like that's that's kind of a roundabout, and I know it's sort of a far-fetched perhaps way to think of relationships, of divine relationships, but it really does have to kind of start with who we are, and knowing who we are, and knowing who the other person is, or the other people are. But in this case, let's talk about a one-on-one relationship, so knowing who the other person is, truly is. And so it's like every day to have a sense of gratitude that this particular person is honoring us with her or his presence in our lives, and gratitude that we are both divine beings and that we each have a purpose here, and that we can help each other to fulfill our purposes, to know them and fulfill them. And just kind of that's sort of a starting place, but it's not a starting place that many people are at yet. And it's been a starting place that's been hard for anybody to get to, certainly hard for me to get to that. You know, I walk into the grocery store and I see the clerks that seem kind of ordinary, maybe bored with their jobs, not wanting to be there or whatever. And so I find myself usually responding to how they present themselves rather than who they really are and who I really know them to be. So I think it takes...
Can I say something about that?
Sure.
The way I experience grocery clerks or anybody I meet is we have a divine meeting it's like we both showed up for this divine meeting, and however we got here is important. It's just important that we got here. It doesn't have anything to do with being ordinary or extraordinary. It's, I guess, that we're beyond that, and we showed up in these various roles that don't mean anything. And it's very important to me to just go all the way out from my heart and soul, whatever role they're playing, and just love them. Just love them with my whole being.
Wow.
That seems like my job when I go shopping. It makes me, I've been shopping at 4 times for one meal before because I wasn't paying attention to the list or what I came to get, but to the people,
uh-huh.
No. So, I didn't mean to interrupt what you're saying.
Oh, it was a wonderful addition, and I just and I really know that that's true because I've been with you a lot of times when we've gone shopping and when we've gone to restaurants, and you're the same way with the wait persons. You know, it's just a beautiful, beautiful teaching and lesson, and I learned so much from it.
Well, you know, I've waited tables.
Me too.
I wanted to be a grocery checker when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to be, and it was something about the interaction with the people. It was something about that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my dad forbade me to become a grocery mm-hmm. checker.
Yeah.
It was like, it'll wreck your back, it'll wreck your, you'll get varicose veins. I mean, he just went off on that. No way is a kid of mine going to do that. And I think that's so funny.
Yeah, and I think what what you're saying is that we can extend it, excuse me, that feeling of divine meeting to any relationship that we're in. We are here for a divine meeting, a divine meeting in this moment, you know, and now in the next moment, and now in this moment, and now in this moment. It's like, here we are, and it's in divine perfection and divine timing and divine rightness. And that doesn't mean to say you can't leave a relationship if it becomes not the right place to be, but to recognize that we have been led here. We have led ourselves here for one reason or another, and to treat this moment, to give this moment what it really deserves, which is what you're talking about.
To give this moment what it really deserves. I guess it's, to me, having a divine relationship is that whatever is going on with whichever person is in front of me is that I'm knowing their oneness with God, and I am serving that to the best of my ability. In other words, I'm doing my very best for God.
Mm-hmm.
That moment in every moment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to explain it.
I think you explain it perfectly. That seems to be really just right. Mm-hmm. That's what I see you doing.
Well, it has been a little bit more harder to love myself, though, Miss Joanna.
I know. you can be pretty mean to yourself. That's why I say that it's really important that we start with ourselves and love ourselves where we are and honor ourselves and our divinity and know that we're really, truly always doing our best with what we know and not to regret what's gone. I mean, if we do something that hurts somebody else or something, we can make amends. But to regret it is to say, I should have done better even though I didn't know how to do better at that time. So to take a learning and love ourselves and learn and move on and do better next time. Hopefully the next time, maybe the 10th time after that. But anyway, still it's a gradual growing
time.
Process.
No. So you're saying basically we have to love ourselves where we are and really honor that. Oh, you know what I know about you is when you have some emotion coming up, your throat starts sounding funny and you're clearing your throat.
Yeah.
Tell us what is going on, Miss Joanna.
Well, I think it's the whole thing about opening the heart. You know, I've been a little bit more oftentimes in my masculine self, and opening the heart is just sort of, it's a vulnerable, tender place, and it kind of rises emotions up a bit in me.
Hmm.
Yeah, but it's a good place. I like to be here.
You know. It just as you were saying that, it occurred to me, you know, it's the most vulnerable position in the world, but it's also contains the most power and magic.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
It is being the magic. It is mm-hmm. pouring out the love. It's not trying to get love, remember love. Think about love. Mm-hmm. Watch the love stories that are actually one-night stands. Titanic really ticks me off. Get on the board. We're going now. Yes, you will have to live and work things out. We will have a first fight. Get on the board. We're going. They'll pick us up in a few minutes. Don't tell me your excuses. And I think a lot of people have been willing to drown and freeze to death than confront and face keeping their heart open.
Yeah, I think that's true.
It's belly scaly.
Yep. It is. Yeah. And I, you know, in my progress in relationships, I've learned how to be a really true friend, especially you. You've been a great teacher, or we've taught each other or whatever in that. And to be in a partner relationship, I was married, and then I lived with a couple of different men for a while after that, and had a few other relationships, and I finally realized that I was not the kind of person I needed to be to have the kind of man in my life that I wanted to have. And so I've taken a hiatus from that kind of relationship, from an intimate relationship, and worked on myself, and I had a great deal to work on. I had a lot of changes to make, a lot of healing to do, including past life healing, you know. And so sometimes there is a rightness, a space to be by oneself in the sense of an intimate partner relationship, that we don't have to have that all the time, and just concentrate on friendships, you know, and really, really being a beautiful, wonderful friend, a true friend. That's such a rarity in life, even to see a true friendship. So I feel very, very blessed that I have learned how to be a true friend. Very, very blessed.
And you really are.
And you are too.
Thank you.
Yes.
I just want to share that Joanna and I have been through some really rough times when our just like our worstest parts have come up.
That's right.
And the way I've behaved sometimes, I feel like there is such a deep level of acceptance that you have for me, that I can be there with you. But if I had done something so dumb with somebody else, I don't know if I could ever look him in the eye again.
Oh. Well, I think that's what a true friendship is. That it does, or that it includes that willingness to go to the nth degree with each other and come back, you know. And it's, as long as there is a basic intent of kindness and of moving forward in spirit with each other, then it can stay true and stay basically wonderful.
The purpose also is with me is that I want friendships in which we're not just there to, drink tea and shoot the bull. We didn't come to this planet for our lunch. We came to be the change we want to see.
Yes.
And to show the way out, and to facilitate that, and to to be an upward spiral to the world, to support one another in our mission so that we are both flourishing and both most able to be good, to be of good to the world. I mean, that's, to me, that's keeping myself tuned up.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that, I think that is the essence, really, of a divine relationship, is that you not only know each other but to be divine, but you know each other to that the most important thing that's happening for each one is expansion of spirit, expansion of soul, and to help one another do that and to have that be the main purpose in a relationship. I think that's maybe the basic definition of a divine relationship.
To fan the flame of one another's divinity.
Yeah.
Into full conflagration.
Yes.
Woohoo!
Yay! That was a great one.
I like that.
Yeah, me too.
But, you know, that's the purpose with everyone we meet, isn't it?
I think so. Because it's certainly each person's most important aspect, you know, and so, yeah, to support that in the meetings that you're talking about, like in the store, or to support that with every person, it's really an amazing thing to do, especially if you're going to just be with someone for like 2 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing to do.
I guess it's, my directive is make this 2 minutes count.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I remember a time when I used to just sort of go through the motions and I was being this appropriate self that I was raised to be, you know. I got married and had a couple children, and I thought that meant to be happily married, I had to be Donna Reed. And I tell you that if there ever was anybody that was not Donna Reed, it was me, honey. I could not conform for, you know, I couldn't do it. I tried to bend myself into that. And so I didn't feel like I had anything to share because I was never Donna Reed.
Oh, my goodness.
So I was just basically coming from being ashamed.
Wow.
And I think a lot of people sort of labor under that. They feel guilty for not living up to this picture that they had of themselves and that everybody else held up and said, you should be this way.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I would go through the grocery store without, I would just say the expected things. How are you? I'm fine. Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Thank you. Put the date on the check. You know, that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I realized when I was about, I think I was about 28, that I never really was connected to anyone. They never could feel there was something going on over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted it to be more than an encounter of getting my groceries. I wanted it to be truly connected with people and loving them and of service to them. And I wanted that so much, and I think that everybody wants that so much, Joanna.
I agree. I haven't learned the art of it like you have, of doing something in such a short time, but that's certainly an aim of mine. And just a little story to kind of support what you're saying. Last time I was visiting you, I was in the Safeway shopping store, and they say that if you're visiting someone who's a member of Safeway, then just give their phone number and you get the same discounts off. So I gave your phone number, and I said, I'm staying with Iris Jackson. And she said, oh, Iris, she said, everybody here knows and loves Iris.
Really?
Yeah, I meant to tell you that, and I forgot, but now I'm glad I'm remembering now. But so it is was just a beautiful confirmation of exactly what you're saying.
I really love him.
I know.
I really just love him. You know, I have something to tell about that. When I moved to, when we moved to Alamo, it was, I don't even remember how many years ago, maybe in 75 or something, and the Safeway, their flowers were like three little bent over carnations in a little cup by the cash register, two or three of the cash registers, and it was like, I was just like, this is not going to do. And now Safeway has a floral department to rival top florists.
I know it.
And Mr. Safeway lives right up the hill, and his wife shops there. So we have a floral department for a fraction of a cost of a florist, and it's just... And it's staffed by people like Karen, like you talked to the other day.
Yeah.
Who started talking to us about Saint Germain.
That's right.
So I just feel like that's come forth from me just loving them.
Yep, I feel that's true too.
And it's been a fun thing to do.
And I think actually that has happened in most grocery stores now, the larger ones, because people are waking up, and part of waking up is really loving and honoring and enjoying beauty, including the beauty of flowers. So I think that has been happening everywhere, too.
They have such a sense of joy and celebration and gratitude and shining their true selves.
Yes.
I had a teacher that told a person one time to meditate on one daffodil for an hour. And they're just so joyous.
Yes, they are. Lovely.
You know, and we have to have our priorities, too. I have often said to people, if I had $1, it would be flowers instead of bread.
And not even an edible flower.
We would make do. You know, I feel like the planet where I'm from, you do the flowers and the candles and the food appears.
Yep, that sounds about right.
I never really considered the cooking part, you know.
I
feel like I can barely get to that. So what else about divine relationships? What have you found that works and what doesn't work?
Well, one of the things that's, you know, hard for almost all of us is that if someone does something that we that bothers us, you know, or hurts our feelings or angers us or something like that, how do we be with that? How do we handle that? And I think what's come to work more for me, most for me, and I think this works for a lot of others too that I know, is that I get with myself and I see, you know, that the very fact that I feel bothered or angry or hurt or upset is something in me. No person has the power to anger or to upset me. So it's only how I, on some level of myself, have chosen to react to however they are, however they've been, And so that comes from me. So first of all, to just kind of make space for myself, to get with myself, and be with that sense of hurt or anger, and look deeply and see if I can kind of get a cause in it of myself, or just to begin to breathe and to let it go, to release it, and to know that and remember that that person is doing their very best with what they know, and then come to a place of forgiveness within myself, forgiveness and peace, and then if it still feels like it's of service to speak to the other person, and perhaps request that they consider doing something a little differently, or just to say, you know, when you did this, or I reacted in such and such a way, and it's just a little hard for me to not react that way, or I apologize for reacting that way. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is that we are. Where we are is what we experience with the other person. So, and that includes love. If they're wonderful toward us and we react by feeling wonderful, that also comes from where we are, you know. So to kind of grasp that, no one is able to do anything to us, that it is how we react to, in a happy or an unhappy way, to how a certain person is or has been with us. That's our part of that relationship, and to take responsibility for our feelings, whether they're love or anger or sorrow or fear or whatever, that they come from our own emotional body, our own beliefs, and how we have projected them onto this person. And then to straighten ourselves out, first of all, as very deeply and wonderfully as we can. And
that's the full-time job.
Yeah. It is really. And then if it feels right, or if it seems to be of service, to communicate with the other person honestly and kindly and lovingly, then to do that.
Well,
yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't.
But pretty much that, you know, not to react in anger, in the moment, if we can, and if we do, let that be okay too. You know, we did our best in doing that as well.
Thank you, Joanna. And,
yeah.
You know, one of the things that I learned to do with Jerry, my husband, is say, you know, when you did this, I made up this story that what you meant was this. And it was always some version of, you don't really love me, you've been bullshitting me the whole time,
uh-huh.
30 years or 40 years or whatever it was.
And he would be amazed, right?
Yeah. And then I would be amazed by the time we really communicated, I would be amazed that I ever interpreted it that way.
Uh-huh.
And I would get to see what it really was with him. But I also learned another thing that's so important about myself, is that when I react or when somebody makes me really, when some situation triggers me into being really angry,
uh-huh.
or really sad or really upset, is that the truth is I haven't learned to love myself when you do that.
Oh, that's a nice way to put it.
You know, I can't love myself when you do that. I
uh-huh.
just completely abandon myself the first sign of that, and to tell the truth about it.
Yeah, wow.
It's not asking the other person to be different.
Right.
It's not asking them to fix anything. It's it's like there is the thing I need to deal with is that I know I am responsible for this story. I know I am the author, the props person, the creator. I know I am doing this. So when I do something that I judge to be ugly in my story,
yeah,
like when being really angry or something,
yeah,
is that a, you know, I couldn't love that with love that in my story or love myself for making up that story. And I think a lot of people get stuck in, it is your fault I feel this way. Don't do that. Or, you know, and that doesn't give the other person any space. Like, we can't both bloom and grow and flourish and learn with that sitting there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. And another thing, you know, that happens so much in life is that many of us work for other people, or we notice that some other people may be a lot better off than we are financially or something. And so we might feel like, oh, there are these powerful beings and they have power over me, or they're better than I am, or and so I resent that and I'm a victim and things like that. That's a real easy trap for many people to fall into. And we want to really, really get that there is no one better than anyone else. Not a single person for any reason whatsoever. Whether it's age, you know, age or youth or the appearance or the weight or the finances or the social status or the race or anything, the religion, the ethnicity, anything whatsoever, the job, you know, the whatever, the employer, the employee, no one is more powerful than another person. No one is better than another person. No one has power over us. We are the power in our lives. We, our own divine self, is absolutely loving and powerful. And whatever good we are able to receive from this, this is the good that's in our life. And there's really no other truth than this. And so to really, really get this, I'm not a victim. Nobody's better than me. Nobody's more powerful than me. I am just as powerful as any person, just as loved. I can be just as wealthy, just as happy. I can have just as great a job. I can be, you know, whatever it is, we can really receive every goodness from our own, from really looking up to or into our own divinity just as deeply as we can, to feel it, to know it, to love it, to accept our good, to call for our good, to know it's here, then everything that we could possibly want does come. And it may take us a while to learn how. It certainly has taken me a while to learn how to really allow the good to come in. But it is we who are doing that, or we who are not doing that. It's no one doing anything to us. And that's so important for us to know. Because we have, if we're working for someone, then we can have a divine relationship with that person. You know, we don't have to do this resentful thing or this small thing or anything like that. We can have a divine relationship with that person, even if we don't ever really talk to them. We can love them and honor them, love ourselves, honor ourselves, know that this employee-employer relationship is perfect and divine for this moment or whatever the relationship is, and it's great and it's good and it's honored and appreciated and accepted, and then we, you know, it's like when we can really know these things, then we enable or empower ourselves to receive all of the good that we desire from our own divine I Am presence.
Well, it's also, you know, you were saying whatever job we're in, I was thinking of, you know, I used to go, why do I have this job? You know, what am I doing here? Uh-huh. And later, I saw how every job I had prepared me to do what I am doing. Like, one of the things I was for a while is a telephone operator, and I truly learned to really connect with people and really serve them in that environment. And the telephone company tries to make you a machine. It tells you exactly the words to say, what phrases to say, how to do it, how to train the customer to ask the phone company for less service and do it themselves. And I didn't care about any of that. I just cared about really making a connection with the people and serving them. And so they would listen to you.
Uh-huh.
It was like working for Big Brother. They would listen to you. They would listen in on your conversations. And they would give you a grade, you know, whether you used the phrase, and it would count against your whole team if you got operator errors and stuff. And, you know, Joanna, they listened to me. I didn't do anything they told me to do. And I got so many customer commendations where people would actually write a letter that
wow.
they just let me slide. So, but I also saw how everything I've done has, it's very important, you know, to not be mechanical, as if there isn't really a person and a being and a heart.
Yes.
On the other end of the line. And so I felt like I really learned to connect with people. And that's one of the, you know, gifts that brought me here, able to do this. I mean, I was really, without my conscious knowledge, gathering what I needed to do to be what I am.
Uh-huh.
And I think everybody does that at some level, don't you?
Well, in a sense, I guess. I had a little bit of a similar experience in that for a while, it was kind of after I was doing the regular jobs that I was expected to do or thought I should do or whatever, and I was in my marriage and finally I just kind of, I got that there was nothing that I was doing and nothing that I could see in the path that I was on that was worth anything to me, that felt like it was worth anything to me. And so I quit. I quit my last job, and which was a job counselor, I just took off, and I went to Arkansas into the Ozarks, where there was a homesteading community, and I camped for the whole summer, and things really turned around for me in that time. And so when I came back from there, and my spiritual, you know, path started to open up to me. And so when I came back, I still needed to earn money. Alan and I had parted at that time, my husband. And so I taught myself how to type. I got one of these learn how to type books. And so I applied for being a temporary legal secretary. I had no training in it, but I had some native intelligence. And so I did okay with that. But it was kind of like with you, what am I doing here? What is this? What is this? And these stupid suits that you write up where somebody turned around and tripped and then they're suing the person whose house they were in. And
That means I don't have to worry about creating and taking care of myself. You have something. You do it.
I'm not responsible for my own life or how or where I put my foot.
Yeah, it was your floor.
Right, your fault. So anyway, I finally, when I was in that place and doing those jobs, I finally said, hey, I'm here. I'm just going to appreciate being here. And so I started going with a whole different attitude. I'd appreciate my boss. I'd appreciate that I was earning money, that it was supporting my life, that I could take a week off here and there, and that I was smart enough to do it, and I got to dress up and, you know, look pretty and work in San Francisco, where I loved to be at that time. And after about 2 weeks of that, place and job opened up for me across the bay in a Tibetan Buddhist institute. And that was the very first job I ever had where I felt like I was doing something of service to the world.
On purpose.
So, yeah, but it took my stopping resisting and judging, you know, the temporary legal secretary job, in order to release myself from it.
Well, you also came in to praise, love, and gratitude.
Yeah, I did. And it did teach me how to type, and I certainly use that every day. And I know that I'll never go to a lawyer for anything.
Oh.
They taught me that, too.
You know, I was in court one time because I had this really outrageous ticket.
Yeah.
And I sat there waiting for my turn, and I realized that so many people think it's so important to be a lawyer, you know. And I saw people outside the courthouse in the orange jumpsuits chained.
Wow.
They were in manacles and walking by in a line and stuff, and I thought of the lawyers and the judges that think this is a really, really good job.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I was sitting there and I thought, they're all in prison. They're wearing these ties, they don't go outside. They think things are important that aren't important.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe there's some lawyers that are really thrilled and jazzed and inspired and all of that. But I didn't feel it that day. I felt like everybody was pretty much in jail, and I determined to create my life from that time forth, so I never went back there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting that particular choice, and choices of work like that, they really are about the head. They're about the intellect, the analyzation, the splitting of hairs. They're not about the heart. And it's not to say that no lawyer has heart. Obviously, that's not true. And there are many that do pro bono work, you know, for just to help others, help people that don't have enough money to do themselves, or to do with charity work, you know. So there's a lot of goodness in that profession, but mostly it does seem to be a really heady thing rather than a heart thing. And that's okay. It's just fine and perfect for people, each person, to be exactly where they are. And maybe being in the head and that way for a while or a long time helps them to say, hey, this is not much fun. I'm not having a lot of joy here, a lot of love. And I think I'm going to do something else next life or now in this life, you know. So, yes. And again, it's like, if someone really felt their own divinity, would they be a lawyer? I don't know that, and probably so for many of them. But it's just an interesting thing that I think you and I, neither one of us relates to very much. But
thank you.
Lawyers
Jesus.
Have hearts and lives and relationships and love and all that too. So it's kind of an interesting job.
I didn't find it interesting.
Yeah, well, it's interesting just to look at it, to me, to see that someone could be in the head all the time and live from that, or you know, at least in their work. So, most of the time. So, what? How does that relate with divine relationships? That's our topic today.
Well,
I'm not sure.
I think one of the things is. You have to be attuned to yourself enough to know what truly feels good and nurturing and happy and make your happiness and the love the most important thing. I think it's a matter of priorities.
Yeah. And that goes back to actually where we started today, that your first relationship is with yourself. Yeah.
You know, I've been meditating on really, really, really knowing God, Goddess, I am inside me and inside everyone else and hearing God's voice and knowing God's will and feeling one with God. And every day I've been doing that in my meditation as my number one priority.
Mm-hmm.
And one day God said to me, if you want to know who I am your relationship with yourself.
Mm.
I am your relationship with yourself.
Mm. Wow. That was a wake up, huh?
Wow. I don't know if I'm completely waked up on that or not, Miss Joanna. I feel like I'm still thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like my relationship with myself and a lot of the people that I've known, their relationship with themselves was not any shining thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's like having a long way to go there.
Yeah. Yeah, I've learned more and more how to be kind to myself and honoring of myself. And it's been a very happy thing for me. And I know it is for everybody, you know, as we start to do that more and more.
Well, it's the key to honoring everyone, too.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about it, I feel this real, real important component there is part of honoring yourself is not being defensive when somebody doesn't agree with that.
Uh-huh. That's true.
You know, when somebody doesn't see eye to eye with you, when somebody doesn't value what you do or what you value.
Uh-huh.
And you're very good at that, both honoring yourself and whatever they're doing about it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
So I really acknowledge you and honor you for that. And it's a real test of non-resistance.
Yeah, it is. It's true, isn't it? And to be strong enough, to feel strong enough in yourself and about who you are that you can let anyone else be who they are, too. You don't have to resist. You don't have to judge. You don't have to change anything or fix anything. You know, you can really just let each person be who they are.
Yeah, and I've often thought it was such a waste for people to, like, hold up their little picture and show the other person they're in relationship with, this is what I want, this is how you be, this is how you act, this is how I know you love me.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that is loving the picture instead of the person.
That's right.
I think so much of that has passed for relationship.
Yeah.
I think we could go on and on about this. I think we should do this again soon to talk about divine relationships.
Okay.
I think we're only just kind of a little bit, sort of barely getting warmed up, Miss Joanna.
Yeah. And we only have about 2 minutes, according to my clock.
Yeah, so tell people how they can reach you. I think less than 2 minutes.
Okay, yeah. I have a website. It's ascensionmastery.com. Ascensionmastery.com, and that's ASCENSION, Ascension. And I have 2 books, and I have some CD sets, and there are a bunch of articles, and also I have a business that distributes pictures of beautiful pictures, laminated pictures of masters and angels and deities and Buddhists and Hindu and all many different spiritual traditions. So those are available, and there's a link to that on my site. So it's ascensionmastery.com, and also do sessions with people. So, and you can reach that through the site as well. Well, Iris, I sure have enjoyed being with you today. It's been really wonderful.
I've enjoyed it too, as always. Mm-hmm. And I thank you. I want to say for gracing us with your beautiful presence.
And I want to say thank you for doing this wonderful radio show and giving me an opportunity to be on it. And hopefully it has served all of the people listening and just everybody, whether they listened or not. And so be it.
And so it is. Thank
all
you,
right.
Ms. Joanna.
Okay.
God bless you.
God bless you. Love you. Mm-hmm. Bye.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep shining until then. Happy trails to you till we meet again. I love you. And this is my wish for you, that all your dreams come true and are 1,000 times more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible. Ah, men, ah, women, ah, children, and yeehaw!